Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today. We have an interesting show today we've never had before, and it's getting to be more and more common, so we hope to have a big education session here today, more in mainstream. We're going to be talking about hyperbaric medicine. And when you hear that word, I think a lot of you are probably thinking about our experience of it as the treatment of choice for dive illnesses and decompression when you come up too fast. But what has actually happened is over time, we found that the decompression chamber and the ability to increase the oxygen saturation in our tissues has been helpful for many, many uses in medicine. So we're going to hear a lot about that today. And I have two guests with me. Both of them are from Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. The first one is Charles Hall. Welcome, Charles.
Hi there. Thanks for having us today.
Yes, you're welcome. And Charles is a nurse that got his degree from South University. He has a long history of successful experience in surgical and cardiovascular intensive care, and he joined Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia in 2010, so welcome.
Thank you.
And we also have the chief medical director with us, Dr. David Schwegman. Welcome, Dr. Schwegman.
Thank you.
Boy after my own heart, went to get his medical degree at The Ohio State University and completed his residency in emergency medicine there. Then he moved down here to South and was an assistant professor of emergency medicine at Emory University for several years, and then joined as chief medical officer for Hyperbaric Physicians of Georgia. He's also been named one of Atlanta's top docs by Atlanta Magazine, so we're thrilled to have you today.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy you could be here. Also tell you congratulations on the birth of your brand new son. We were just looking at pictures. That's always an exciting event. So we feel special that you're here with us instead of hearing screaming babies, at least for a few hours. So
it feels good. It's like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. It just feels
there
good.
There you go. There you go. So a little mental health break here around the table for a half hour or so. Well, I'd like to start with you, Dr. Schwegman, and just talk a little bit about hyperbaric medicine. I mentioned what we think of, but just kind of tell us what it is and how it's grown up in terms of use through the years.
Sure. Well, hyperbaric medicine is really a simple thing. It's the use of oxygen under high pressure to help induce physiologic changes in the body. So again, what a lot of people think of is exactly what you mentioned, is scuba divers, and we know it's very effective for that. But over the last couple hundred years, we've actually realized that there are a lot of other things that hyperbaric medicine does. Mm-hmm. So
let's talk about, we're going to talk about some primary indications and then some secondary ones as well. But I would like to start with HBOT, which is hyperbaric oxygen therapy specifically, and what that is and what are the indications for that use.
Sure. So the use of oxygen under pressure, basically by pressurizing a chamber with oxygen, we can supersaturate tissues with oxygen, and it promotes a few things inside the body. So number one it can do is it can actually promote new blood vessel formation. So in patients that have had radiation damage, for instance, blood vessels get damaged in the path of radiation, and we can actually help to regrow those blood vessels. The same thing is true for patients that have diabetes. Oftentimes, the very small blood vessels get damaged from diabetes, and we can actually help to restore those. Same thing with peripheral vascular disease. So as far as other indications, the other physiologic effects of hyperbaric oxygen is that it can help kill bacteria. So for folks that have infections inside bone, does not have very good blood flow, and blood flow is the source of healing. So we can actually deliver oxygen into that bone without really the need for blood. So that's another indication. Some more emergent causes that you don't really think of on a daily basis is something called a cerebral arterial gas embolism, which you will see generally after cardiac surgery. Necrotizing fasciitis, which is the flesh-eating bacteria. Carbon monoxide poisoning is the other emergent indication that that oftentimes people will think of, and you'll see that in the wintertime when people use their kerosene lamps or people that are in a structure fire. The majority of what we see, though, is generally wounds related to folks with diabetes, folks with peripheral vascular disease, and folks who have had radiation treatment for various different types of cancers.
What about burns?
It's really good for thermal burns. We don't see that often for people that are acutely burned, because generally they're very, very ill in an intensive care mm-hmm. unit. However, you know, a classic example of somebody who benefited from hyperbaric oxygen therapy due to a burn was Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. So if you all remember that
Pepsi commercial,
exactly, on fire. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that was the reason that he actually started using hyperbaric oxygen therapy, was to treat his thermal burns. It was very effective.
Interesting. One of the things that I'm wondering, I'm hearing about, like, our normal body, we're walking around breathing oxygen, and Charles is going to tell us a little bit more about the chambers and the experience in them. But when you get in the chamber, what is the difference? Like, if my normal blood is what percent, and when I get in the chamber, what would I be circulating?
Sure. So you're talking about a partial pressure of oxygen that you're breathing now. When you get into the chamber, you're talking about a partial pressure that's 20 times what it is there. So to not dumb it down too much, but mm-hmm. if you're sitting in a hyperbaric chamber, we could actually pull every drop of blood out of your bloodstream, replace it with plasma, and you would just sit there and enjoy the television programming.
So it's not only the oxygenation, it is the atmospheric pressure.
Absolutely. So we can actually make blood obsolete. So the delivery of oxygen is via blood vessels. Well, we don't need them. When we supersaturate the tissues with oxygen, we can actually push oxygen into the tissues without the need for blood flow. And that's exactly the purpose. So people that have a lack of blood flow due to radiation damage or diabetes, there is no blood flow getting to those areas. Mm-hmm. We don't need the blood flow to get there. We can actually deliver oxygen to those tissues. And in really, wound healing and healing in general is an oxygen-dependent mechanism. Mm-hmm. So without oxygen, it won't heal.
Mm-hmm. But so just straight through the skin.
No, actually,
breathing.
Breathing. Yep. If we were an amphibian, oxygen. You could get it through your skin. But since we're not frogs, it's got to go through the lungs. And that's often a question that we get asked is, well, why not, if I have an ulcer on my foot, why not just put a bag around my foot mm-hmm. and give me oxygen that way? And it's just that we don't absorb oxygen that way. We have mm-hmm. to breathe it. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're an amphibian, you can get away with that. Otherwise, it's got to be mm-hmm. inhaled through the lungs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Charles, let's talk a little bit about, we've talked about indications for using hyperbaric medicine and how it kind of works, but let's talk about the chambers themselves, educate us a little bit about them, and then we'll talk about the patient's experience in them.
Sure. Later on, obviously, we'll talk about our website and you can take a peek there. There's some photos of the single person chambers there. But we have two types. One is called a monoplace chamber. It's obviously, as the name implies, it's for a single person. They're not really very small. I mean, for folks that have some concerns about confinement, you'll be surprised when you see the chamber itself, actually how large it is. We can accommodate a very large individual even in our solo chambers.
Is it like a cylinder?
Yes, it's a cylinder-shaped device that is acrylic on the sides, real thick acrylic, so it's very clear. And so therefore, I mean, it's so clear that once you're inside there, I mean, outside of touching the sides, you really are not very aware of them. The chambers for a single person have a television monitor that's attached to it with sound inside the chamber, so I can sit and watch a television program or a movie and look to my side, and there will be a technologist or a nurse right there with me that can communicate via handset.
Do you lay down in the chamber?
Yeah,
it's laying down.
Yeah, there's a gurney that rolls into the chamber with an elevating head, so we can adjust you in a reclining position that's okay. comfortable, using pillows and everything to get your position just right. Having been a patient in our practice treating an injury, I was able to treat in both the single person chamber and the multi-place chamber. For me personally, I found that the single person chamber was my favorite. Now, mm-hmm. For somebody that does have a little bit of issue with confinement, the multi-places are great because they're kind of like being on a commuter jet, if you will, in terms of their size. It's about 9 foot diameter, I believe, is our Kenistone practice, and that holds up to 8 patients plus one of our staff who goes in with the patients to help them do their air brakes and take care of them should they have any kind of issues. Even inside the multi-place chamber, there's a television there too. So since you're in there for a little while, you need to have some sort of entertainment.
But so we're all just kind of sitting around in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a seat for me. There might be other people in there.
Yep, it's very much like riding a MARTA bus.
We're not breathing. We don't have any apparatus specific to us.
Yes, you do. And the difference between the two in that regard is that in the monoplace chambers where I'm going in, the air is actually pressurized. The chamber is actually pressurized with 100% oxygen. So all of the gas that's in that chamber with me is O2, mm-hmm. Because it's a much smaller space. Mm-hmm. The chamber, the multiplace chamber, is so large that to pressurize it to the depth equivalent that we're treating at, it would be a huge consumer mm-hmm. of oxygen. So what we do there in that case is each patient either uses a hood that looks kind of like a spaceman's hood, if you will,
okay.
clear plastic, soft plastic sides, and it's basically made airtight by a soft rubber dam that basically wraps around your neck, kind of like a turtleneck, that gives you then an airtight seal. So we deliver oxygen through that hood. If a patient doesn't really like that, then they can use what a face mask, basically, what would look like you would see on like a fighter pilot, for mm-hmm. example, if you've ever seen Top Gun and they mm-hmm. have the mask on their face. It looks very much like that, because those will also create a good seal so that we're making sure that we're delivering the maximum amount of oxygen there to those patients. And then in addition to that, the tender, the person that goes in there with those patients in that multi-place, because they're not getting them on room air, because you have to evaluate their dive time, if you will. So taking that out and having them on room air, helps limit their exposure to oxygen and limits their risk for any kind of toxicity for high.
So in a multi-place, they're getting the atmospheric pressure in the room, but they're getting the oxygen through their own device, whether that's a mask or a helmet kind of thing.
The patient receives it through a mask or a hood. The tender just breathes the room air in the chamber itself, just like you and I are breathing right here.
Okay, so you mentioned air brakes. What is an air brake?
Well, one of the things that we'll see with, when you talk about potential risks, there's not very many with hyperbaric medicine, but one of them is that because we're delivering such high
concentration of oxygen.
That's right, and we're under pressure, so that means we're absorbing the massive quantities that David was talking about. When that happens, and the levels of circulating oxygen start reaching a certain point, they can potentially become toxic to the brain, which would cause us to have a seizure. So to avoid that, if somebody has some risks for seizures, either they've had some seizures in the past or maybe they've taken some steroids, for example, that can kind of reduce your risk or reduce the threshold, if you will, for having a seizure, we will build in what's called an air brake, where we make them breathe regular air for about 5 or 10 minutes once or twice during the treatment session so that we flush out those high levels of oxygen and bring the level back down to closer to normal for a brief period of time. And that prevents, those brain toxicity issues from occurring.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that the amount of time in the chamber is prescribed by the physician, right, mm-hmm. Dr. Schweigman?
Correct.
What would be like an average time that a patient would be in one of the chambers?
Most treatment times are about 90 minutes. Okay. Some are up to 2 hours a day, and some are as short as 1 hour. It just depends on the indication. But I would say the typical average response would be 90 minutes.
Okay. And how are the patients monitored when they're in there? Are their vital signs taken? Is there a healthcare professional there? What happens?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time the patient comes in, we evaluate them before they get in the chamber. So they get a full set of vital signs. If you have diabetes, that includes an AccuCheck. Mm-hmm. We make sure that your sugar is high enough to get inside the chamber. We have a tender that sits right next to you the entire time. So when you speak, we can actually hear you speak. In order for us to communicate with you, we just pick up a tiny little phone. Okay. So we are sitting next to you the entire time. When you come out of the chamber after your treatment, we again take your vital signs. So you'll get it before and after, and we're sitting with you within almost hand reach for the entire time that you're there.
Okay. And I noticed that when we're talking about the chambers themselves, when I was doing some research on the internet, there are some people using inflatable chambers, which mm-hmm. I think gets a totally different result and isn't quite equivalent. So when people hear about a decompression chamber, they're not all a roses. Is that right, Charles?
It's a very easy mistake, just because folks realize that, feeling good about oneself and having a sense of health and vitality is good business. There are folks out there that have made available the inflatable bag called mild hyperbaric medicine. They're not even supplementing oxygen, so you're basically breathing room air under mild pressure, about the equivalent of 9.5 feet under seawater, versus us, who's going to take a patient to a minimum equivalent of 33 feet below seawater. And basically the difference is, because our drug is oxygen, the easiest analogy I can give you for somebody who actually has a problem they're trying to fix with hyperbaric medicine is, if you had an infection and they gave you an antibiotic pill that had the dose of antibiotic that would fix that problem, and then you cut that pill into 9 pieces and you took one of those 9 pieces and took that trying to get your infection fixed. That's basically the difference of what we're talking about between mild hyperbarics and real hyperbaric medicine. Is it's very important for somebody who has either some radiation injury problems or diabetes or a true chronic wound that they're hoping will heal if they get access to hyperbaric medicine, that they need to go to a true UHMS accredited facility where they're going to get true hyperbaric medicine. The other is, you know, kind of treating yourself to a pedicure. It's okay. Money well spent. If you leave feeling better, you know, then it's served a purpose. Mm-hmm. But physiologically, the differences are extraordinary.
So you mentioned that there's accreditation with these hyperbaric chambers to treat patient wound care patients and these patients. Mm-hmm. It's the process that you go through mm-hmm. to get certified?
The UHMS, the Undersea and Hyperbaric Medicine Society, is essentially our joint commission, if you
okay.
will. Joint commission being the entity that goes around and accredits hospitals and kind of dictates the standards that they have to do with regards to their records and just general policies. It's the same for us with regards to the UHMS and hyperbaric medicine. What they do is they will come in and do the much the same thing as the Joint Commission does, evaluate how we keep our records, what do we do for performance improvement, any kind of research projects that we may be doing, those types of things. But also they serve, they have a large committee of professionals that come from the field, both academic as well as active clinical, and whenever research is submitted that is proposing a new treatment indication, they basically break the group into two sides, one for pros, one for cons, and you know the pros will argue based on the evidence submitted why we should include this particular treatment indication as a new one that's approved, versus the other group will poke holes in that. Why is that not a valid way? Because it's very important when you have a modality like we're dealing with here with hyperbaric medicine, where there's several different groups that are in many ways very different from each other, and we're saying that to each of these different groups we can really change their outcomes. People can begin to be a little skeptical about what you're doing just because you're telling me that this one treatment modality will fix a diabetic's problem, but it'll also fix this radiation patient's problem, and it'll you know deal with this type
because
of issue
it's
over
a wide
here.
Variety
it starts
of
looking,
uses.
It starts looking a little bit like your modality looking for an illness. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is most of the problems that we treat with hyperbaric medicine do have some similarities, even though the pathology that causes the problem is different. In many of the cases of the patients that we treat, it's still some sort of vascular damage or hypoxia as being one of the core problems that we're dealing with. So the UHMS is very, very serious about making sure that we are
keeping evidence-based.
Going to like Medicare mm-hmm. and the insurance companies out there that are going to pay for this treatment, that we are very well supported by evidence and that it's truly worth the patient's time and money to get this care.
So I imagine with accreditation and probably the expense of building one of these rooms, and I have no idea what they cost, that they're not common.
No, there's only about 650 programs or so around the states.
Okay, so are they freestanding centers? Are they based in a hospital? Are they both? Or
it's both. Ours in Atlanta, there's a couple of independent practices, one of ours being one of those, and in fact, we're the largest privately owned group of certified wound specialists in the country, or in the Southeast for sure. And there are certainly some hospital owned programs as well. Many of the major hospitals in the metro have hyperbaric medicine programs. We're co-located, like for example, in the St. Joseph Hospital facility, though we're not part of the hospital mm-hmm. Entity, if mm-hmm. you will.
Legal entity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so yes, there's both freestanding as well as hospital-based. My recommendation for a patient who's trying to decide where to go is, are they UHMS accredited? That means that they're at least measuring up to the UHMS standards, and they're fairly stringent to get that accreditation. Beyond that, you know, get an idea from the physician, how many times for this particular indication am I likely to go for therapy? The physician should be able to give you a pretty good idea in terms of range of treatment exposures that it's going to require for your treatment. Obviously, each patient's course of therapy is very much dictated by their clinical response to it, but I can tell a patient that comes to us with a diabetic ulcer with osteomyelitis, they're probably going to go somewhere between 30 and 40 times in the chamber, depending on their outcomes. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's significantly more than that, you really kind of have to start wondering, mm-hmm. are they treating me or are they treating my insurance plan?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dr. Schwegman, let's go back to you. We've talked about indications for hyperbaric medicine, but what about contraindications? Are there any patients that just won't tolerate this pressure, that shouldn't have this much oxygen?
There are only a handful of contraindications, okay. Which, you know, hyperbaric oxygen therapy is actually very safe. So the folks that we can't treat, one of them is a specific chemotherapy agent, which is not very common. Mm-hmm. If someone has a collapsed lung, so mm-hmm. what's called a pneumothorax.
Couldn't handle the pressure.
Can't handle the pressure. We're very stringent about who we put in the chamber. If you have a very low ejection fraction, meaning if your heart doesn't have a very good squeeze, it will put a little bit of extra stress on the heart. So we make sure that you have adequate pumping function of your heart. Short of that, there really isn't much that is a contraindication. And oftentimes, you know, the only contraindication we find is that if a patient doesn't want to treat for one reason or another, whether they're claustrophobic or or just decide that this is not the treatment.
What about oxygen-related, like COPD people? Can they handle and will they benefit from this?
No. Generally speaking, folks that have COPD, as long as they're not carrying around an oxygen tank, generally it's pretty safe for them. And we'll always speak to the patient's pulmonologist and get their thumbs up before we would put them in the chamber. We never, if there's anything even remotely concerning, we'll discuss it with the patient's specialist before we would consider putting them in the chamber and make sure that we get the two thumbs up from them.
Okay. What about pregnancy?
It's actually contraindicated in pregnancy, except for folks that have had carbon monoxide poisoning. Okay. So,
okay. Yeah. And any other kind of medication things, like people on blood thinners, anything unusual with certain, you mentioned chemotherapy, but any other medication?
Yeah. Other than chemotherapy, then again, Charlie had mentioned being on steroids. It would be something that would be in our mind because steroids can decrease the threshold for seizures, make you more likely to have a seizure. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, it's not a contraindication at all. We're just more aware of that. We make sure that we give you enough oxygen breaks to mm-hmm. decrease your risk of having a seizure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, worst case scenario, the risk of having a seizure is about 1 in 10,000. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very low. Okay. If you have a seizure, you have a seizure. It lasts for a couple minutes. We pull you out of the chamber and say, okay, we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
So it's generally not even a big deal.
You know? Okay, very good. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the potential side effects since you brought up just the seizure. But are there other side effects that the patients would experience? Not only side effects, but post-treatment, what would they expect?
Sure. The most common side effect by far and away is the fact that we're using pressure. So it's just like
ears.
If you're driving up a mountain or if you're in an airplane, you feel your ears pop and you've got to be able to clear your ears. So if for some reason you notice pain in an ear while we pressurize the chamber, you just say, hey, my left ear hurts, and we stop the chamber. We wait for you to clear, and we take you back down once.
How long does it take to pressurize the chamber?
To go to 33 feet takes us about 10 minutes. To go to 45 feet takes us between 12 and 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yep.
So faster than diving.
It's pretty.
Wait, that's pretty fast.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how good of a diver you are. I don't know. I could probably get to 33 feet pretty quickly,
yeah,
but that's by far and away the most common side effect. You know, we did mention the fact that there is the potential risk for seizure, but again, that's very, very low. Some folks, about 10% of folks, notice a little bit of change in their vision as they get along further in hyperbaric. So it does change the shape of the globe, which is a very, very temporary event. A month after you've had your hyperbaric treatments, you should see just like you did right before you start.
So one of the things I was curious about is I would think if I go in and I'm having all this oxygen, I'm getting the effects of that, then when I walk out of the chamber, when I feel sluggish, like, oh my God, where'd the oxygen go?
You know, there are a handful of patients that do notice a little extra sleepiness.
Okay.
But as many of those patients, there is the same number that feel a little bit invigorated.
Okay. So, and then post-treatment, just back to normal routine, can they drive?
Absolutely.
So you just walk out
ready
and you're
to go.
Good to go.
And actually, we start our days very, very early in the morning so that we can accommodate patients that are working. So we will put our first patients in the chamber between 6 and 6:30 in the morning so that they can actually go and resume a normal day.
Okay. And now I wanted to revisit, Charles, you brought up something about the expected treatment lengths. Like when you said osteomyelitis is just a difficult to treat infection, maybe 30 or 40 treatments. But and I'm guessing based on what the illness is, and of course you treat a wide variety of things, the duration in terms of how many treatments will vary. But is there like some standards, like a typical wound infection will be this long, a typical diabetic would be a different length?
You may take that? Yeah, absolutely. So we know that physiologically, the first 10 treatments in a hyperbaric chamber are what's called the latent phase. Basically, for us to rebuild blood vessels, think of it like building a house. The first 2 weeks
need a foundation. See anything.
Well, the first 2 weeks is actually delivering all of the wood and the bricks to the construction site. We know that for building blood vessels, there's a rapid capillary growth between treatments 10 and 20. Now, obviously, there's a little bit of variation from patient to patient, but this is fairly consistent. So erecting the house happens between treatments 10 and 20. And then we know that the capillary growth tends to slow down for most folks after treatment 20. So we know that we have to grow as many capillaries as we can. In order to achieve that, generally, you'll want to top the tanks off a little bit. Stopping at 20, you may still, for some people, be only halfway there. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, most treatment protocols are between 30 and 40 treatments. Mm-hmm. There are some that are less. There are a couple that generally can be more. But generally speaking, I think for most indications, I would say if you were to hit me with a, you know, give me your estimated hard number, it's 30.
Okay. And so do you actually monitor the wound? Let's say we had a patient in there for a diabetic foot ulcer. Do you measure at certain increments? Like, is that improving? Do you take pictures? What happens?
We do both. Okay. Absolutely. So our goal is whenever we have a wound care patient and we're performing hyperbarics, we prefer to actually also do their wound care as well.
Okay.
So that we can see that
the result
either once or twice a week so that we can know exactly what's going on. That way we know if things are stalling out, we have an issue, a problem that needs to be addressed. If we're just taking care of the patient from a hyperbaric standpoint and not looking at their wound, we're not doing them any good because we need to monitor on a continual basis to make sure that we're having an effect. The last thing that we want to do is treat someone for 6 weeks or 2 months and then
unwrap
the dressing and go, well, that didn't work.
Right. You know? So I also read on your website that you actually do quite a lot of specialized wound care and advanced wound care, not just the chamber itself, but special dressings. Do you want to talk about that, Charles?
Sure. You know, in reality, in a typical wound program, if you look around the country at, you know, specific wound programs like ours, it's only about 15 to 20% of the patients that come to the wound center actually are indicated for hyperbaric medicine. So obviously we're doing a lot of things beyond that. For example, patients that have venous stasis ulcers, they can be pretty significant. They can take months or even years for them to heal. So getting to the right medical specialist. And that's the thing that I believe, in my opinion, really differentiates our practice in terms of wound patients versus other programs out there is that you can easily go to someplace and you can get wound care ad nauseum in a perpetuity. You can just, we'll just see you next week and we'll see you next week. We've got it looking good. We'll see you next week and it's not shrinking. Mm-hmm. Our physicians, by contrast to that, are going to be saying, all right, we're giving you everything that we know by evidence to make this move ahead, and it's not. So there's got to be something that we're missing. Why isn't it healing? And so therefore, that might mean with some of these patients involving another specialist, whether it's with a diabetic patient, for example, we may be talking to, in all likelihood, we will be talking to a vascular or interventional cardiology people to make sure that their vascular system is actually getting our drug to where it needs to go. Or some other type of specialist if necessary, or just looking at, you know, what is it that we've missed? Is it a nutritional thing? There's so many factors that go into a chronic wound that need to be addressed, and your wound specialist needs to be saying, why is this not shrinking? It should be steadily and routinely getting smaller than the last time I was here. So that's
what it sounds like, Dr. Schwegman, from your post capillary growth period, that the patients themselves should see some kind of results like around 20 treatments.
That's when the ability.
Because they're going to want to see the results too, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's when the patient begins to have the ability to heal things themselves.
Okay.
So it's, remember, wound healing is an oxygen dependent mechanism. You have to have blood flow to heal, to deliver the oxygen. Mm-hmm. So after 20 treatments, that's really the beginning stage for people. And that's the only thing that I tell folks is you have to be a little bit patient, because if you say, oh, yeah, I heard about people that did hyperbarics for 2 weeks and it didn't work. Well, you didn't really get into the active part of what it was there to do. Mm-hmm. If you're patient for a few weeks, all of a sudden, it's great. When you start taking the dressings down after the patient's had 3 or 4 weeks of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, all of a sudden there's explosive growth
healing
in that.
Because now you've created the capillary structure,
exactly.
The infrastructure.
Exactly. And the great part about that is it's not like going to the gym. for you go to the gym, it's January 1st and you're all excited and you've got your New Year's resolution. You go to the gym for 6 weeks, you start building a little bit of muscle, mm-hmm. and then you kind of fall off and things go back the way they were. Mm-hmm. The great part about hyperbarics is the effects are permanent. So mm-hmm. the capillaries that you grow, you can do they're a biopsy yours. 10 years from now and they're yours. Mm-hmm. So the ability to heal, once you're finished with our treatment, your ability to heal just moves forward indefinitely. And the great part about it is if you've got a foot ulcer on your right foot, generally speaking, our legs are mirror images of each other. What tends to affect one leg affects the other leg. So the other leg is just an ulcer waiting to happen. And so the great part about it is if we're regrowing capillaries on your right foot where the ulcer was, guess what? We're going to regrow them on the left foot as well. And that may help prevent in the future for you.
Very good. Now, I know we've talked about some specific indications, but I also know that list is expanding every single day. I'd like to talk about just some of the more, not routine ones, but things that are going on in your field. Like I read a little bit about autism and hyperbaric or brain injury or post-stroke, mm-hmm. Things that are just kind of starting to have the volume to be explored to know if it's evidence-based, but you're seeing some promising things. Can mm-hmm. you speak to any of those?
Sure, I can speak to all of them. The one thing that's exciting for us, I think, is the traumatic brain injury. We've been fortunate to treat some war veterans and NFL football players and folks that have had traumatic brain injuries, and it's really remarkable what we're seeing, and it's not just based on symptomatology. We're actually looking at things like SPECT scans before and after treatment and seeing a dramatic increase in blood flow in various areas of the brain that were actually really quiet due to mm-hmm. damage. That's an area that's really exciting for us, and they're really at the forefront of medicine. With regards to autism, if you look at the data isn't compelling for treatment with hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Mm-hmm. And as a new dad, I can understand anyone wanting to treat their child with anything that they could to get their child mm-hmm. better. And we haven't been treating folks with autism in the past because we're very staunch about making sure we follow the Undersea and Hyperbaric Medicine Society guidelines. That being said, we don't have a problem moving forward. If someone wants to do a small trial of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we don't mind trying because there are some folks that are getting benefit. It just isn't across the board high enough that we feel confident that that's something that we should offer everyone out there mm-hmm. Because it's very important to us that we have an outcome-driven practice. We want to do the right thing by the patient. We're not after a buck. We know that if we do things the right way, that our practice will grow.
Another area we were talking about off air when we discussed the show in general was the uptake in cosmetic surgery. And because of the fact that people are doing quite extensive wound healing mm-hmm. Post-op, that some people electively are using this as a wound healing mechanism. Is that right?
Absolutely. So, wound healing, a scalpel is no different than, you falling and cutting your knee. Again, it's both a wound. And what hyperbaric oxygen therapy can do is actually help squeeze out the swelling in those tissues. So it kind of wrings it out like a washcloth.
The atmospheric pressure?
The pressure in the chamber.
Okay.
So it can actually help reduce swelling and inflammation after any sort of surgical wounding. The same thing with people that have had facial peels. That's actually a thermal burn. So the same thing. We can actually help decrease the inflammation, decrease the swelling, which will actually increase your ability to heal more quickly, less scarring, things of that nature.
Okay, very good. So new things coming for sure. Charles, I want to go back to you. Sounds expensive. So talk to me a little bit about, do insurances cover it? I'm sure they do for some things. If they don't, if I'm that gal that had the facelift and wants to get out there sooner, what kind of process are we talking
True.
About financially?
For the patients that you were just speaking about, the elective aesthetic patients, as they're very aware, their insurance doesn't pay for the facelift or augmentation of whatever parts. And so therefore, if they do have some issues with either a surgical wound dehiscing or coming apart, not staying together mm-hmm. like it could or having some problems, their insurance is not then going to say, well, because you're having problems with your elective procedure, we will pay for this indication in hyperbaric medicine. Unfortunately, it too is going to be out of pocket. Mm-hmm. So for those patients, it truly is on a per treatment basis. It's rather expensive. Mm-hmm. But for the patient who's insured or they're a Medicare, Medicaid patient, basically what you're looking at is it's going to vary by patient based on their co-insurance and their co-pay situation. Mm-hmm. So That's what's really going to drive their cost is what is your copay, what is your deductible, what is your coinsurance requirements, because it can vary really greatly from each patient who, you know, who comes into the door and wants to get treatment.
So on the elective side, I know you're not going to give me a number, but just in general, will I be charged for a room charge, a physician visit? Like, what are the components that it would be?
It's very much from the business side of things. It's very much like going to emergency room or outpatient surgery. Okay. There is a physician charge and there is a facility charge. So, you know, from that perspective, yes. I mean, that's really how it's built out. Much like your outpatient surgery center will
be. Okay, very good. The facility plus the services is basically what I was getting at. Okay, very good. Well, we're almost out of time. We have about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to go back, and I found in the years doing the radio show that we can talk about all the statistics, but the people listening will remember the success stories and the actual stories of getting people from point A to B. Mm. So I'd like to revisit. I know you, Charles, as the administrator and the marketing person for the practice, you've had lots of experience talking to patients about their experiences. Are there any that come to mind?
Numerous since I've been a part of the practice the last few years. And repeatedly, we are asked by our patients when they get to us and they start getting better and they had been stalled for so long or dealing with a radiation injury for so long is, why did it take me so long to get here? Because for the lion's share of our patients, when they get to hyperbaric medicine coupled with a certified wound physician like ours, all of a sudden now they're healing, and they're healing at a dramatically increased pace over where they were before. So, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that many patients, particularly among the radiation patients that are dealing either their post breast surgery and now their reconstruction came together and did fine, or maybe it didn't. They're having pain. For example, their affected breast is very, very painful. They can't carry their child or wear a seatbelt without significant pain. A lot of them will get tired of that and they'll go to look, what can I do for my, you know, problems where I've had radiation. Same thing for prostate cancer patients, for example, or pelvic radiation patients for gynecologic oncologies. Those patients can have significant bowel and bladder problems, you know, from bleeding. That's one of the big common problems that they'll develop either from the bladder or from the rectum, and that'll typically be coupled with significant bowel changes or pain. And that's obviously very disruptive for your quality of life. And so therefore, if I'm kind of dealing with this and they're trying to treat my symptoms, they're giving me some medicines, they're giving me some enemas, whatever the case may be, and I'm still dealing with this months or years later, many of them get tired of it. They start going on the internet. Thankfully, we've got Google, and everybody goes on Google or YouTube.
We're all sourcing healthcare online
thanks to the Affordable Care Act. It's really very much becoming ask your doctor, and a lot of our patients, particularly from the radiation set, get to us that way. So, you know, that's my big goal is to help these people understand that when they're dealing with a chronic wound or you're dealing with chronic late effect of radiation problems, wherever they may be, is that you really do have a resource right here in the community. In our practice, I can say very, very much so that any of my loved ones and myself would be trusted with their care. You know, take advantage of that resource to either get yourself or your loved ones there, or if it's a physician that's listening to us and you've got a patient that's dealing with either a limb-threatening wound or bony infection, you know, get with our practice and get those patients healed, because we're very much collaborative with the physicians that work with us. And then for the patient, you know, look us up. We're right here, and we'll give you a very good, honest physician's opinion as to what will get you better.
Yeah, so Dr. Schwegman, I was going to ask you out of curiosity. So if I'm just a patient thinking like this sore's been on my foot forever, what is chronic? Is that I've had it for 6 months, 2 months, 2 weeks? What would the patient consider as chronic?
I guess it, you know, all depends on the size. If you have a gigantic wound, 6 weeks isn't a long period of time for it to get healed. It's basically when a wound doesn't get smaller.
Okay.
So it should be getting smaller every time you take a Band-Aid off. It should look better and better and better.
So when you're not seeing progress.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you look and you go, gosh, it looks the same to me like it did last week, you know, bells should be going off in your mind that you likely need to see somebody that has expertise to figure out what is the barrier that's causing you to not heal, and how do we remove that barrier? Right. And that's why
we're
here.
That's a good way to look at it. And then do you have any patient stories that stand out in your mind?
You know, there's so many. It's hard to pin down one, but I'll just kind of give you an example. And it's really the patients that we see on a frequent basis that come to us that are told that they need an amputation. That is whether it's on the foot or all the way to the knee or above the knee, that come to see us months later and they walk in with both feet. Mm-hmm. There are so many of them.
So saving limbs.
Yeah. Every one of them, it's the smile that's on their face to know that, you know, they were facing an amputation that was prevented. Mm-hmm. And it's
as a former
really,
home care nurse that used to take care of all those wounds, yeah, amen to that.
Yeah.
So
we can show you some photos that would really impress you in a negative way with their severity, and you would be certain that should be amputated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, truly, I can't tell you how many times in the last 4 years I've seen that type of patient mm-hmm. who was being told, and not necessarily unreasonably, by a surgeon, this needs to be amputated. The caveat to that statement is we've got hyperbaric medicine here in our community. So before we go to amputation, we need to take advantage of this modality that's mm-hmm. right here. And it's very well proven by evidence that is going to give that patient a very good chance that they may not lose it, or at least it'll be mitigated. It very won't be good. As bad as it would have been before.
Very good. All right. Well, we just have a very short minute left, but I want to give you a chance, Charles, to talk about the practice very briefly and tell us how to reach you by phone and by web.
Sure. We do have 4 office locations around the metro area, and certainly when you go to our website, it'll give you contact information and addresses there. The website itself is www.hbomdga.com, H-B-O-M as in M-D as in doctor, G-A.com. There's frequently asked questions. We're beginning to get some patient testimonials up there, so you will begin over time to see more and more patients that were dealing with the same problem you were. There's information about every one of our physicians, where they came from, what their experience level is. And our physicians and offices are very good about answering questions that people may have. Is this something that I should be seen by your doctors for? So definitely feel free to call. Same for the physicians. If you're out there and you're dealing with a patient with either a chronic radiation problem that they just keep coming back and keep coming back, not getting better, or a wound that you've been managing that's not getting better, and truly if it's threatening a limb, just pick up the phone and call our physicians. You don't even necessarily have to send them over right away. You can call them up and say, hey, we're dealing with this. Would this be something that you could help us with? So
and
either
the phone,
way.
A phone number?
Well, I hesitate to give a phone number just because it's going to depend on which practice you're going to call. I would really direct you to the website to figure out which center is the most convenient for you, because we've got 4 different numbers for them to call. So
okay, very good. So get online, he says, and find which is closest to you. All right, yeah. Appreciate that. Well, I want to thank both of you for being here, Dr. Schwegman, especially with the new baby at home. I know you hate to leave that. Charles, thanks for coming in. It's been very informative for all. Oh, one more question. Can patients self-refer?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's not just you have to be referred in from your doctor. I think a lot of times patients feel like, oh, I can't do anything without a doctor, but actually they can be seen and evaluated and should not hesitate to pick
up.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. And just to let patients know too, if you go to the website, there's a contact us email that actually comes directly to me.
Okay, great. So that it's your easy, very accessible.
Yeah, and I'll try to get back to everyone. My goal is to try to get back to everyone within 6 hours. And sometimes I can do it in 5 minutes.
Very
good. So, if you have questions that you don't feel comfortable picking up the phone, or if you're, you know, on your mobile device and you had a question that you wanted to ask the doc, go for it. And I'll get back with you very shortly.
Right. So for technology advances, we have hyperbaric medicine here, not just for deep dive illnesses, but for wound healing, oxygen therapy, all kinds of indications. Check it out. Thanks so much for dialing in today, and we'll talk to you next time. Also, check our website with our sponsor, www.healthgate.com, for offers that may help you there. Have a good day. Bye.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.